The Newest God. 3 months later, Zeus and Hermes travelled to Nisus on the north coast of Africa, an area that lies, it is generally believed, somewhere between Libya and Egypt. There, Hermes cut open the stitching on Zeus's thigh and delivered him of a son, Dionysus. The infant was suckled by the rain nymphs of Nisus. A grateful Zeus rewarded them by adding them to the heavens as the Hyades, a spiral constellation whose rising and setting the Greeks believed presaged rain. Once weaned, Dionysus was tutored by pot-bellied Silenus, who was to become his closest companion and follower, a kind of Falstaff to the young god's Prince Hal. Silenus had his own train of followers too, the Silenae, satyr-like creatures, forever associated with antic riot, rout, and revelry. It was as a youth that Dionysus made the discovery with which he will always be associated. He found out how to make wine from grapes. It is possible that Chiron, the centaur, taught him the trick, but another, more charming story tells of the young god's passionate love for a youth called Ampelos. Books 10, 11, and 12 of the sprawling 48-book epic poem The Dionysiaca by the Greek poet Nonnus of Panopolis details this relationship and its aftermath at great length. Dionysus was so besotted that he arranged all kinds of sporting contests between himself and Ampelos, always letting him win. This seems to have caused the boy to become rather spoilt, or at least reckless and foolhardy. Riding a wild bull one day, he made the error of boasting that he rode his horned steer more skillfully than the goddess Selene rode her horned moon. Choosing a punishment straight from Hera's vicious playbook, Selene sent a gadfly to sting the bull, which caused the maddened animal to throw and gore Ampelos. Dionysus rushed to the dying youth's mangled side, but he could not save him. Instead, he caused the dead and twisted body to transform magically into a winding, writhing, climbing plant, while the drops of blood solidified and swelled into luscious berries, whose skin shone with the bloom and luster the god had so admired. His lover had become a vine, which is still called Ampelos in Greece to this day. Dionysus produced the first vintage and drank the first draught of wine. This witchcraft, as it were, of turning the blood of Ampelos into wine became the god's gift to the world. Nonnus interrupts the action here, a thing he does a lot. His poem is astonishingly dull, given its superb subject matter, by having Eros come to comfort Dionysus with tales of other great male lovers. He tells of Calamos and Carpos, son of Zephyrus the wind, and Chloris, nymph of greenery and new growth, as in chlorophyll and chlorine, two beautiful youths passionately in love with each other. During a swimming contest, athletics and hunting seems to be a theme with beautiful youths coming to a sticky end, as we shall see in the tales of Hyacinthus, Actaeon, Crocus, Adonis, amongst others. Carpos dies, and a desolated, grief-stricken Calamos commits suicide. Calamos is changed into reeds, and Carpos into fruit. They are the Greek words for reed and fruit to this day. A combination of the intoxicating effects of his invention and the enmity of Hera, whose hatred of any bastard of Zeus's, divine or otherwise, was always implacable, sent Dionysus mad for a while. To escape her curses, he spent the next few years travelling far and wide, spreading viticulture and the techniques of winemaking around the world. It is said that he gave the secrets of the vine to every known land except Britain and Ethiopia. It is sadly true that neither country has a great reputation for winemaking. Perhaps this explains it. In Assyria, Dionysus encountered the king and queen, Staphylos and Mithe, and their son, Botrys. After a banquet in Dionysus' honour, Staphylos died of the first fatal hangover. As compensation, Dionysus named in their honour bunches of grapes, Staphylos, alcoholic liquid and drunkenness, Mithe, and the grape itself, Botrys. Science has taken these names and immortalized them in a way that splendidly exemplifies the continuing relationship between Greek myth and our language. When 19th-century microbiologists looked down their microscopes and saw a bacterium with a tail from which clusters of grape-like nodules sprouted, they called it Staphylococcus. Methylated spirits and methane take their names from Mithe. Botrytis, the noble rot fungus that benignly affects grapes on the vine, lending premium dessert wines their incomparable and shatteringly expensive bouquet, owes its name to Botrys. Throughout his adventures, the new god was accompanied not just by Silenus and his retinue of satyrs, but by an intense band of women followers too, the Maenads. The violent mysteries of these extreme worshippers were depicted in all their shocking savagery by the Athenian playwright Euripides in his play The Bacchae. In this bloody tragedy, Dionysus returns to Thebes to wreak his revenge on those of his mother's sisters who refused to believe Semele's claim to be carrying Zeus's child. The god sends King Pentheus mad and causes his bewitched aunts, Agave, Ino, and Autonoe, to tear the poor man apart, limb from limb. Dionysus was soon established as the god of wine, revelry, delirious intoxication, uninhibited dissipation, and the orgastic future. The Romans called him by the name Bacchus, and worshipped him quite as devotedly as did the Greeks. Dionysus was to stand in a kind of polar opposition to Apollo, one representing the golden light of reason, harmonious music, lyric poetry and mathematics, the other embodying the darker energies of disorder, liberation, wild music, bloodlust, frenzy and unreason. Of course, the gods, having living personalities and stories, often strayed from such frozen symbolic identities. Apollo, as we shall see very soon, was himself capable of being bloody, crazed, and cruel, while Dionysus could be more than just the embodiment of inebriation and debauchery. He was sometimes called the Liberator, a vegetal life force whose license could benevolently relieve and renew the world. Ovid commonly uses the name Liber for him. It carries the sense of freedom and of libertine, as well as, unconnectedly, book.